for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Dan Mitchell, Brian McLean, and Lynn Shaw on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to State of the Nation. Today in our second hour, our guests will be Chief Patrick Gordon and Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Don't forget to lock in our phone numbers. We want to hear from you. Call us. We want to talk to you. The lines are now open. I have to talk about this, everybody. I can't help myself. Kamala in Africa for the entire week. Kamala Harris visiting Africa to strengthen U.S. ties, avoids Republic of Congo. And she filled her pockets. You know, she can't find her southern border as border czar, our vice president, but she lined her pockets with, I think it was $55 million to dangle in front of them. And she is going all over singing and dancing and speaking, but she refuses to go to the Congo, where 70% of the cobalt is mined. And also they have a tremendous human rights abuse issue with child minors in this area. So I want to talk about this, because where is everybody while this is going on? Why are we allowing this? Why isn't anybody really calling her out while she's singing and dancing? And what about all these kids? Somebody say something.
These are the questions. These are the questions, Lynn.
Well, we are here to critically analyze why. Why this woman, who, again, cannot find our southern border. This is a slap in the face. Border czar is going over there. Now, I think the whole story is really about cobalt. Wouldn't you agree, everybody?
I think the story in three words, but I want to hear what Dan has to say, because I can answer it in three words. Dan probably going to have something more eloquent.
Well, I think the Biden people in the White House realize that Kamala Harris is in over her head, and sending her on some utterly irrelevant tour of other countries around the world, it's sort of like the equivalent of a ribbon cutting ceremony in the United States. So I think they're just trying to figure out some way to utilize her where she won't be putting her foot in her mouth, where she won't be stepping on herself. And sending her off to Africa is other than the fact that it'll probably lead to more wasteful foreign aid spending, is probably a relatively harmless thing to do with a politician who's in over her head.
Well, Kamala wants to colonize Africa and Biden wants to strip mine Africa. So I think there's a bigger story here about cobalt and the use of cobalt. What do you think, Brian?
It's all about virtue, power, and money. And I suppose you could combine power and money and put energy as the third thing there. And if I wanted to keep going, I might add slavery, because as you pointed out, Lynn,
yes,
she very, very carefully picked. There are so many countries in Africa that have their own distinct regional and cultural problems, and their complex relationships with places like China and the United States. She went to those three. She did not go to Congo. There is a deafening silence in the mass media about those giant pits, those pits in the earth,
yes,
where up to 1,500 men and small children down to age 7 will be in there with their hands wearing nothing but flip-flops looking for this stuff. I watched a collapse happen on one of these mines the other day on my social media feed, and I watched these poor shirtless, shoeless men pull more than 5 people out of a hole. I mean, it was terrifying to watch this, because you know that there's people in there. I'm watching it without sound. I don't know how many people are in there, you know, potentially about to have the earth come down on them. I mean, it's horrifying what's going on. And they tell us that this whole push is for our own green energy and to get less carbon monoxide in the air. It's ridiculous.
Well, this is,
there's no question. There's no question that the U.S. and China are competing for the natural resources that exist in various African countries. But I don't think that's relevant to Kamala Harris's visit, because if you were the Biden administration, would you trust Kamala Harris to do any sort of high-level negotiations? No, you're sending somebody over from the State Department or something like that. You're bribing some African dictator. You're not relying on one of the most incompetent politicians I've seen in 40 years in Washington.
She can't make a sentence. You're right. So what you're saying, I think, fits her into the virtue category of mine. And that's what we see in the mass media, is the virtue of her going there. But really, what you just pointed out was the other thing I had written down in my notes about this. We were thinking about talking about it yesterday, and that was, they're not trusting this woman to make any deals that have to do with power or money. There is an ambassador, there's a businessman, there's she has a group of people with her. She has an entourage that are taking care of those things. And this is just the virtue / media optics aspect.
It is, and I'm agreeing with both of you, except this is a tremendous human rights abuse being thrown right in our faces, and especially with these child slaves, because that's exactly what they are. So where is this country with their big mouths, always, you know, calling everybody out, our own American citizens, and yet this display, disgusting, disgusting, and people have to start calling it out. We are here on State of the Nation, but I just find this so offensive. She goes all over, and not the one place where maybe her presence, if she was even a better kind of person at all, could maybe make some kind of difference, like the United States cares for these poor children and men and women in Congo, but nothing, nothing. Well, why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're all on the major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Catch the news on the go.
I listen on the way to work.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Biden just invoked an updated version of a Cold War-era law that gives the president significant emergency authority to control domestic industries in order to ramp up production of printed circuit boards, citing the technology's importance to national defense. Here with the story, joining us once again, TNT Radio news producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thank you. But why? That's my question on this one. So President or resident in chief there, Joe Biden, has applied for the Defense Powers Act, DPA, to two components used in the manufacture of virtually all electronic devices, presumably, reportedly, for the purpose of protecting the country's ability to control its supply of electronic materials and equipment. Biden signed a presidential directive that includes printed circuit boards and advanced packaging under Executive Order 14017, also known as America's Supply Chains. This is according to an announcement made by the Department of Defense yesterday, March 27th. The original executive order, which was signed in February of 2021, addresses vulnerabilities in U.S. military readiness and economic competitiveness. Biden wrote back then, quote, "The United States needs resilient, diverse, of course, and secure supply chains to ensure our economic prosperity and national security," end quote. The DPA authorizes the president to control the production of items necessary for the national defense by allocating materials, services, and facilities for their production. The president may also prohibit the hoarding of supplies, offer loans or loan guarantees, and install equipment in government or privately owned factories. In recent years, y'all might recall, in case you didn't know, something similar went down. Presidents Obama, Trump, and Biden have used the law primarily, usually, generally, to prioritize the fulfillment of orders placed by the federal government for medical, recently, and military equipment. This makes sense to me. Biden's directive delegates these powers to the DOD regarding printed circuit boards and advanced packaging. Printed circuit boards are electrical circuits etched into a material like copper to which other electronic components may be attached. Advanced packaging is the aggregation of several electronic components into a single device. So maybe Hesher can help me wrap my head around that part. By including printed circuit boards and advanced packaging under the DPA umbrella, the administration builds on the CHIPS and Science Act of 2022 in reducing, I figured it out, U.S. dependence on China, the world's largest producer of electronic components and devices. So I guess my original question stands, everybody. Why do you think this is a War Powers Act thing? Is this because we're at war with China over technology or something like that? What do you think?
Well, I definitely think it's not good to be reliant on China. I don't think China has our best interest at heart. But here's the disconnect. If Biden really thinks it's important to have a bigger industrial base in the United States, why is he proposing nearly $5 trillion of taxes over the next 10 years, taxes that mostly hit investment? So we want companies to build factories, create jobs in the U.S., but because Biden is so captured by this Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren class warfare, he's proposing tax increases that definitely will not lead to more jobs and more investment and a bigger industrial base in America. So I think we have another vapid politician pursuing completely inconsistent ideas, probably not even aware of how what he's doing in one part of the administration is contradicted by what he's doing elsewhere. And it just goes to show that the more power we give government, the more power we give them to break our economy.
I just want to jump in with one thing. I want everybody to remember rule number one, Defense Production Act. Think of Patriot Act, No Child Left Behind. The other day, Restrict Act, and we have to talk about that. They all sound great, but there's always something more behind them that is not good for the American people.
Enough said, Lynn. I mean, that's exactly it. They pass these things, some of them omnibus things, right? These omnibus bills, the thousands of pages, they'll give them maybe 8 hours to read it. They vote across the aisle for these things, and they are all completely ridiculous, unconstitutional, end up printing money that gets used against us. It's absolutely sick. And back to the topic at hand here, this is a self-inflicted wound. I would like to back up just a little bit and discuss from an IT and just industrial perspective how this is a self-inflicted wound. There is no reason why, there are plenty of financial and power reasons why iPhones are made in China at places as factories where they have to put up suicide nets outside of the tall buildings. There are reasons why there are kids mining for cobalt in dirt pits in the Congo. It's because we have had a corrupt government for so long that they have ignored all these things, nay, leveraged all these things for money and for power, and to become the front runner in the fourth industrial revolution, the first wave of the fourth industrial revolution, right? That's what our dot-com boom was. That's what all this stuff has led to. And then once all these garage companies, those that weren't, funded with CIA seed money, all these garage companies come to prominence, right? And we have these young tech CEOs, and they all become completely non-human people. They become people that build the ethos in their business on a communist value. They tell everybody there, hey, this is a campus. It's not a workplace. We're going to save the world. We're going to make everything great. And we're going to use the progressive ideology to do that. That's going to be our creed and our credo. We're not going to hire anyone outside that. We're going to work with every politicized government agency that can do that. And in the background, we're going to become terrible capitalists. We're going to become the most rank crony capitalists in bed with the government that we could possibly be. They're taking in all this money. They're doing things that are completely shady. They're doing it under cover of the Democratic National Party and the Fortune 100. They're all making tons of money off of it. But essentially what's happened is we have outsourced all of the creation of motherboards, video cards, and CPUs to China. And now they want to have a war with China, whether it's a cold war, a hot war, a financial war, I don't care. And they want to have a hot war with Russia. So they need motherboards, video cards, and CPUs. They also want to be able to, I'm sorry, I'm ranting, but they also want to be able to shut the economy down and the supply chains down. And what happened when they did that with COVID, we couldn't get motherboards, video cards, and CPUs, and they need a constant supply of those to wage war.
Now, don't forget, Brian, a lot of what you're saying also describes that industrial policy semiconductor subsidy bill. that was pushed through the Congress last year that Biden signed. Another big excuse to give politicians more control over the economy. They don't simply say, okay, let's have a zero tax rate on semiconductor companies that operate in the U.S. That would actually bring the production back here, make the U.S. more competitive, create jobs in America. But no, instead they say, okay, companies, you get in bed with us, big government. We'll give you some money, but then you also have to help advance different left-wing agenda items in terms of everything from childcare to racial preferences, you name it. But it's big government, big business in bed together. That's actually technically what a fascist economic program is, but because that word has a different connotation nowadays, let's simply refer, as you said, it's cronyism, but a really odious form of cronyism that is not going to be good for America's competitiveness.
Right, and they're bringing in federal agents, weaponized political yes. federal agents onto their own boards to censor people and then tell us, oh, well, this is just all something that happened. Again, I'll circle back to where I started. This is a self-inflicted wound, and be it, for multiple reasons, multiple lacks of morality and intelligence leading to this self-inflicted wound. I'll yield there.
that's another program, everybody. But you can just feel it getting tighter and tighter every day, like all of this surrounding what's going on. Ruckus, anything more you want to leave us with?
I think you guys nailed it, because to your point, y'all should know that it was actually industry groups who were calling on Washington to do this type of thing. Well, of course, because they benefit. They get the money. Perfect example of what you're saying.
Well, thanks, Ruckus. You're listening to State of the Nation, today's news talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
If you want to get educated, you come here. You don't go to university. That will turn your brain into mush. How'd I know that? Because I went for 3 years. And trust me, when I came out, my brain was mush. And it's still mush. So if I were you people and you have kids, don't push them down the educational route. Tell them to learn to trade. Tell them to learn to plaster, to paint and decorate, to garden, to do something productive with their hands. Don't rack up student debt, because the world is going to hell in a handcart, and all they'll be done is saddled with tens of thousands of pounds of debt in a crashing economy, lack of jobs, mass unemployment, and they will not thank you for that one little jot. That's my theory for the future, because if you're relying on the man to pay your wages, and I don't mean a male, I'm talking about the man in inverted commas, or the woman for any of you feminists out there that are getting offended. The person, let's call it that, they, them, he, she, it, ze, zim, ping, quasi, quartang, whatever pronouns you want to use. Be self-sufficient, people. Be self-sufficient. That is the message of the hour.
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied, how do you ethically steer people's thoughts?
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook
has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Let's talk about the state of the nation. Call Brian McLean, Lynn Shaw, and Dan Mitchell now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
That's right. Phone lines are open if you would like to call in to State of the Nation, like Holly did yesterday. Thanks for calling in yesterday, Holly. We appreciated that. We also have a live chat room up there at the website. I'll shout it out one more time. TNTradio.live. Big hello to everybody up in there. We got J.R. Blake. We got our very own Ruckus in there. We got Photon up in there. You've heard him on TNT before. We got Other Side of the Mountain. And a lot of our other regulars are hanging out there. So hello to everybody in the chat room. Welcome back to State of the Nation. Joining us now, we have a regular here. I'm sure you've heard him before because you're a regular listener to TNT Radio, right? Okay, he has over 30 years of law enforcement experience in Los Angeles. He is well-versed in anti-terrorism and homeland security, and he was the chief at the LA Sheriff Department in the Metro Division. His name is Patrick Jordan. Chief Jordan, welcome back to State of the Nation. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, we're very pleased to have you. I'm joined by Dan Mitchell and Lynn Shaw. And we actually, you know, I'll start by saying yesterday I stayed tuned to the Steve Hook Show after State of the Nation, as I often do. Shout out to Steve and TNT Radio. We are live 24/7, of course. And, you know, I always appreciate your take on the things that, that you know, happen in this regard. You and I talked a lot during the Uvalde time period. And one of the things I noticed that you said yesterday about what happened in Nashville, you compared the, you know me, I have to throw this caveat on there because I'm already flagging up a lot of stuff I don't like and that I see as politicized talking points with regards to this story. But if everything is above board, that's my caveat. If everything is above board, you rightly pointed out that the law enforcement there in Nashville was in there and dealt with this psychopath in, what was that, like a matter of minutes, not hours, not a painfully long, bloody set of hours.
Yeah, you know, I actually saw the body cam footage today, and to contrast the two, what I saw was probably in the between 2010, there was a movement in local law enforcement to improve their ability to respond to active shooters, particularly after anti-terrorism, because of the anti-terrorism threat. I mean, we changed how we operated after Columbine, but it just wasn't sufficient enough, given that we had this low intensity conflict with terrorism going on. We really needed to upgrade their skills. And so when the first officer arrived there, you saw him get a rifle or something out of his trunk, right? A long weapon instead of just a handgun. And he goes right to the door and he says, I need three. What he was really, what I believe he was asking for is three other guys to form what they call a diamond shaped entry team. So one guy handles, faces forward, the guy with the long rifle. One guy's got the right, one guy's got the left, and one guy's covered behind you. Because you're not clearing and holding. You're going right to where the suspect's at. And once they entered the building, within 2 minutes, they neutralized the suspect. But as you watch them go through this, you see them go, go, go. Now, what I saw, I mean, when the first time I watched it, I had to turn it off because a lot of emotions flowed back to me. I'd been in some difficult situations in my career, and I remember walking past people who were down to get to the suspect. And that's exactly what they had to do. And you have to keep pushing forward in this training to get the person isolated so where you can bring in a tactical team to take care of them or to take the person out if they're actively shooting. That is exactly what they did in this situation. It's a really difficult situation for police officers. I will say I was watching one of the guys because you had a mix of uniforms and you had some guys who looked like they might have been a plainclothes detail that put on tactical gear. And whenever I had a plainclothes detail that did more tactical stuff, they got a higher level of training. And I just have to feel that they were there because it's all hands on deck when things like this happen. And they were the one pushing it. I watched one guy as he was getting pushed forward, poor guy in uniform. And you could see the anxiety. You could just see it in his body language. He's kind of turtling up a little bit. He was nervous. His shoulders are hunched up and he's afraid because he's going to doors. And you can't see on the other side of that door. And what door, 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 go, go, go. That's what they were saying. And they're going through. And just imagine the anxiety and fear that they're facing. But this is what you have to do on active shooter situations. They went to that site. As soon as they heard the gunfire, they adjusted, went to the upper floor where the gunfire was coming from. And this shooter, this killer, this mass murderer, had shot out a window on a second level and was now shooting at the police. So she was ready for action, and she was ready to take out police officers as well. And as she's shooting at the police on the ground, these guys entered that room, immediately engaged, and shot her, and exactly as they should have. So it was a great job by them. This is kind of the standard that we want to see in the industry. I will say, if you haven't looked at the body cam, it's a heart-pounding thing. The alarm is going off. The gunfire is going off. To say this is a natural thing for people to push themselves forward into the line of fire to neutralize these, that it's not. You're into self-preservation. That's what people think. So you have to train and be ready for this. These guys clearly had had some training. They clearly had a mindset that they needed to have in this situation, and they were successful at reducing the risk of further fatalities because of their behavior.
I watched it this morning. It was pretty harrowing footage for sure. Dan's got a question for you. Dan, drop him your question and we'll let him think about it over the headline. We'll take a headline after you lay your question out, okay?
Well, I want to get your professional assessment, not only how quickly they engaged, especially compared to the cops in Uvalde, Texas, but how much time between when the first shots were fired and how quickly they got there. But we'll wait for the break.
All right, this is today's News Talk.
Now, news. TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. A huge landslide swept over an Andean community in central Ecuador, burying dozens of homes, killing at least seven people, and sending rescuers on a frantic search for survivors. Shadow Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Birmingham has warned Australian businesses, and especially the gas industry, will suffer under the Climate Safeguard Mechanism, which was initiated by the centre-right coalition, but is being overhauled by the centre-left Labour.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
All right. Welcome back, Chief. What do you think about that, the response time there?
I think the response time and the robust response, you know, I don't know how long it took for the first unit to get there. When I was running a unit, I always wanted a response time 10 minutes or less to emergencies. And generally, the average response time that I had in L.A. County, and L.A. County is 4,000 square miles, a big area, and was about 6.5 to 7 minutes. That's pretty much when we were on our game. That was our average for all emergency calls, which means sometimes you get there sooner, sometimes you get there a little later, but it's within about 6.5 to 7 minutes. So I would say that this response was within that time frame. It's certainly acceptable within the industry. Obviously, the faster you can get there, the better. You did see a little bit of delay on these guys going because they are taught, you know, when you get there on these active shooter things, you know, try to get a couple guys with you to go in, right? Because the thing about it is you don't want to be the fatality, you know, the first guy going in and immediately killed. By having a couple guys with you, you got a little more firepower than the shooter, and you have somebody that can watch your back while you're looking forward, trying to look for the suspect. So I think this was actually a fairly textbook response. There's always places you can improve, but I think the response time is actually very good and within the industry standards.
Chief, I want to jump right in here. First of all, I want to say thank you for all of your service and everything you've done and continue to do. I want your take on today when these occurrences are becoming more common. And even though this school, at least we heard this, did everything properly, their protocol, I heard their doors were locked, but you can't fight guns, you know. What do you suggest to schools these days? What are your thoughts on this? What are we going to do about all of this?
Well, there's many different, you know, there's a great assessment, threat assessment that's done every couple of years by the Secret Service of all agencies. And it talks about how to handle school shootings. And one of the things they talk about, many times there's a connection between the shooter and the school, but it's more proximate than this one. I mean, she hadn't been a student there maybe almost 2 decades. So it's usually somebody who's going there or somebody who just recently graduated there. And understanding and recognizing the signs. And so that's the big part of it, is make sure the schools are trained and understand what to look for when they have a student that is maybe withdrawn, a student that is crying out, a student that is giving indications that they're suicidal or they have problems. You have to train your staff to look for that. And you have to talk to students that it isn't the right thing isn't to keep quiet about somebody who's suffering. The right thing is to talk about it. So that's one of the very first things you need to deal with is that. In terms of the security protocols, as you said, they actually did everything very well. I mean, they were locked up. They had an alarm. I didn't see anybody in the hallway while this was going on. So it seemed like they had received training from Nashville PD, so they did those things right. I can't think in this situation that they did anything wrong. But in terms of school shootings, it's you can only deal with what is in your control. In this situation, somebody from outside, because since she didn't attend there, since she was in a fourth grade, from outside this their bubble of their world at the time, decided to target it. That's a really hard thing to detect, to stop a school shooting with somebody who has zero contact, because it doesn't sound like she was attending the church, and it doesn't sound like she was attending the school for some time. The school can't, and the security professionals that might be doing the assessment for the school, it's pretty hard for them to detect that kind of threat. Lone wolf, no indication where they're going to attack, very difficult situation.
So don't you think, Chief, with that, that we should have a different protocol at each and every school in the United States, because this isn't good enough, what's happening?
Well, I you saw during the whole anti-police, defund the police movement that one of the things they want to do is cops out of the schools. You know, it's schools to jail pipeline. That's a bunch of hogwash. It's a bunch of people who are really hard leftists who don't want people in the schools. I implemented a school resource officer program. It was well received. We probably saved more kids by doing that, because we detected those that were in trouble. We detected those that were disaffected. We detected those that were using drugs, and we got them help, right? So a good resource officer program can do those things. There should be a cop on campus, at least at the high schools, and they should be taught to engage with the students in a positive way and get information. I'll tell you a story. I put the guy on campus. I said, hey, you're the cop on campus. You're not the friend. And I said, you get information there, something's going on, you follow up. You don't ignore it, right? You're not their friend. And we followed up on a kid who went out to a rave party. He fortunately came back alive, but a parent drove him over and dropped him off. Another parent. We prosecuted that lady. So you can set the tone. This is not right. What you find out in many of these school districts, particularly some suburban school districts, we look at urban school districts and see problems, but a lot of our wealthier areas, the parents are disconnected from the students. And in my experience, I told my guy, you're the guy that's going to say no to them. You'll probably be the first person that says no to these students. And that was exactly right. So I believe that a good cop on campus can detect some of this stuff. He can gather some facts as to what's going on. He'll be the guy that says no. In this case, the program I implemented, the deputy ended up being a father figure to many of these students that they didn't have. He ended up being the parent that they didn't have, and he ended up being the person that gave them guidance that they weren't getting from home. So I believe in the cop on campus. I don't believe in this rhetoric that cops shouldn't be on campus. In this case, it was a private school. I went to private schools. My kids went to private schools. And the cost of having a police officer on campus is difficult. But you can look to maybe hiring armed security. There are some other methods, that's a possibility. So,
yeah, I actually think people would step up and volunteer, of course, well vetted and all of that, to do something like that. I don't know your thoughts on that, you know, ex-military, or because I've heard from a lot of people like that. So I don't know your thoughts on that. But I am glad you brought up about the school resource officer, because I live in the middle of New York City and we work with a lot of the schools, and they report to us that they actually have these bonding relationships with the kids and help the kids out. And it's the kids are so vulnerable these days. These become like that, you know, missing family member. So they're well needed in the schools.
Yeah, we got to reject this left notion that cops all bad. You know, we develop relationships. They're not friends, but they are friendly with the students. So the students feel open and ready to engage with the police officer or the deputy sheriff. And it's generally a positive outcome. You know, when we have rules and regulations for a reason. It's to check behavior. And these are really just tipping points or points, data points, basically to say, hey, we got a problem. We need to deal with it. When the cop is on the campus, they can recognize things that teachers and parents don't see, and they can start that a lot sooner.
There are pictures circulating of the shooter. I'm looking at one right now, and the shooter came off their social media, I believe. Pretty sure. It says trans rights, and then it has a picture of a number of different rifles in like rainbow colors, and it reads trans rights or else dot dot dot. And people are starting to flag up, Jack Posobiec is now saying, and that picture, I'm not 100% sure it's the shooter, but he may be pointing out, this movement here. It says the trans vengeance movement has led to a series of assaults and now the murder of Christian children. So that's the kind of rhetoric you're getting on one side. And then you've got the, for example, the Trans Resistance Network and what they tweeted out. I know you saw that. We got to let you go in a moment here, but do you want to address this sort of trans rights vengeance sort of talking point that's floating around now in the wake of this?
Yeah, well, I'm really curious to see what the manifesto said. There was a couple of bills that were signed earlier in the month in Tennessee, one that restricted gender-affirming therapies or surgeries in Tennessee, and the other one that restricted the ability to have sexualized performances in public property or with kids related to these drag queen shows. And that was what spurred the backlash and the day of action that's supposed to be April 1st and may be related. And if it is related, that would be sad. One thing that I said yesterday, and I'll say it again today, I'm really getting tired of this anti-Christian, anti-Catholic rhetoric that's out there that goes unchecked because it's really unfair. If we're a tolerant and diverse society, then we should have sufficient diversity to allow for religious freedom as well. And that seems to be not something that is embraced by the extreme left.
Yep, 100%. And by the way, that Twitter account, they turned it private. They have a statement they put out that you can go find on other accounts. It's been retweeted, but they said for requests for interviews, refer back to their own statement, which is now on a private account. So, you know, they're taking a lot of backlash for this and they have to protect their account from all the backlash. Okay, Chief, there's a lot more we could talk about. We'll probably have to have a discussion again. There's always going to be more with this. I got more in the notes here. So we'll do this again real soon. We appreciate your time and everything you do. Like Lynn said, thank you for joining us here on State of the Nation with today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
Why are the Western democracies letting themselves be bullied by their own leaders when it comes to carbon dioxide? It is absolutely infuriating to see what is going on. And you want to know something? It's the fault of the people who are not actually looking at what is happening and just accepting what is going on. China, by far, is the greatest contributor of CO2. And if you want to blame CO2 for the warming, it's China you look at. Since when has anyone stood up to China about trade policy, about COVID, about child labor? And yet they just get away with building two coal plants a week. And what of the European Union? They're also decreasing their carbon emissions. With the United States, both are well less than 50% of China. So why are the leaders of these countries bullying their own people? Turn around and stop China and take a stand against China if you truly believe that CO2 is causing all this. I suspect there are other reasons, though. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The lack of civilian access to working group meetings on the WHO pandemic treaty is a concern. Another is the degree to which the World Health Organization will no longer be making recommendations to member countries, but dictating to them. Astrid Stuckelberger, a scientist at the Institute of Global Health of the Faculty of Medicine of the University of Geneva and former employee of WHO, said in March 2021 that the 194 member countries are not voting on whether they agree on the pandemic treaty. Instead, they are legally bound to concede to its framework. This delegation, put together to draft the pandemic treaty, has been embedded in the constitution of WHO and is immediately approved by 194 member states, regardless of whether they adopt its principles. This delegation is legally binding according to the international health regulations.
The conversation continues with Lynn Shaw, Dan Mitchell, and Brian McClain, and State of the Nation on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He gained fame for his claims about mishandled intelligence before the September 11th attacks. And he is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, a New York-based Times bestselling author, CIA-trained intelligence operation officer with 35 years of experience in global and national security. And we could go on and on and on, but we want to hear from you. So welcome, Colonel Schaefer, to State of the Nation.
Hey, great. Great to be here. Thanks for having me tonight.
Of course. I want to jump in and ask you a question about there's this headline going around how the Pentagon wants to work with big tech and develop arms makers. Now, when I read the headline, I actually thought, aren't they already doing this? You know, isn't everybody already in bed with all of this? What do you have to say about this?
So the history of DoD working with technology goes back well before the internet. And in the late 90s, there was a recognition that the world was about to change. A lot of deep thinkers were recognizing that society was fundamentally going to change. I actually was in charge of the first undercover cyber unit in DoD, doing any number of things, enabling operations, advanced compartmented technology operations, which is about as much as I can say about it. But suffice to say that the relationship between big tech and DoD goes back over 20 years. And so this kind of current discussion is kind of a head scratcher, because over the past 10 years, the relationship has been undeniable. I know, you know, I advised many of the members of the national security team of the Trump White House. And at one point, Joe Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Joe Dunford, actually talked about issues relating to technology, especially regarding China, and the fact that Google, amongst others, were, you know, unwilling to do some things with the Pentagon, but they were willing to do them for China. So the relationship is deep and abiding. Plus, there's DARPA. DARPA has been involved in a lot of advanced technology. There's any number of projects going on that relate directly to psychological operations, information operations, weaponized technology. And again, that's something I was working, is the weaponization of technology. That was not new and something we were deeply engaged in back in the late 90s and early 2000s.
This is Dan Mitchell. What does psychological warfare mean for someone without a military background? Does this mean somehow, you know, misleading memes in another country's social media? Or, you know, I assume it's something more complex and interesting than that. How can you describe it for our audience?
Well, I think the broad category that captures all of that is called information operations. And just simply put, information operation can be an assassin taking out a world leader at a critical time, all the way down to monitoring keystrokes of individuals of interest or groups of interest. So that it's a full spectrum. Psychological operations is within that tapestry of capabilities. And it can be sublime to looking at YouTube videos, trying to figure out who's watching them, why they're watching them, and do modifications of those videos in some ways that may not be detectable, all the way to some of you may have watched recently the Waco American Apocalypse that is out right now on Netflix. I highly recommend it, by the way. I know the team have put it together, and it has no agenda. It just tells what happened. The psychological operations that they used against David Koresh were actually advised by Special Operations Command. That's about as much as I can say about that. But those types of operations where you have loudspeakers blaring in the middle of the day and night trying to get under people's skin, that's one category of it. But it's a spectrum of things that is available to DoD planners depending on what the requirement is. Now, let me make it very clear that DoD and the programs I worked on were focused on foreign nationals and targets overseas. That's not to say that others within the U.S. government doesn't look at these sorts of technologies and capabilities and then tries to apply them to targets that were not designated by DoD to be a target. And I would cite for you FBI, other DHS potentially, who've looked at these sorts of things for their own purposes, which would, of course, be domestic, which I am vehemently opposed to any of these things being used on domestic targets relating to U.S. citizens.
Would the Twitter files be a good example of what you're talking about right there?
Oh, yeah. So as much as has been disclosed on that, no one has gotten to the why. It's like, yeah, they did all this, but why? And the why is linked back to the very thing you're asking the question about. They were trying to create an effect. These things were done to create some outcome. That outcome had to be essentially posited. They had to presume or assess what an outcome would be based on their actions. Those actions have been very well documented. They've been released to the public. I think people ought to be looking deeper into those disclosures than simply acknowledging that, oh, the government was unduly influencing Twitter. There's a reason why they were doing that. And all of those things that were done were linked to classified programs that need to be examined and brought to the light of day. I've spoken to a number of members of Congress. I've made additional protected disclosures, which is a technical term for being a whistleblower. And I've recommended that they look into some of the linkages I believe exist between classified programs and some of these domestic spying programs, which fundamentally are illegal, unconstitutional, and anyone who engaged in those sorts of things violated their oath of office. And I do believe there needs to be some sort of an enforcement mechanism that's created by Congress to go after people who do blatantly violate their oath of office to spy on U.S. citizens, and more importantly, to manipulate their thinking. Remember, the whole thing regarding COVID, that was a psychological operation. There was a decision made somewhere that the prevailing narrative would be China did not originate the virus on purpose. There was no gain of function. And the vaccines are all safe and effective. Those are all psychological operations which were launched, some of which are still ongoing to this day.
Colonel Schaefer, I want to jump in on something. TikTok has been dominating the headlines with, the CEO congressional hearings. I work with a lot of big tech companies and child issues. And it occurred to me that why just TikTok? All of a sudden, why just China bad TikTok? Knowing, and I say this because I'm able to separate everything out, knowing that Twitter was regularly meeting weekly with our government. There's no evidence of TikTok even meeting, regularly with our government. And why aren't we going after everybody? I feel like everybody's dumping on China, to be honest. And just there's a bigger meaning to this whole TikTok story. I feel like there's something brewing behind the scenes while we're being distracted with all of this that, for instance, we recently had the Restrict Act pop up. A lot of things are popping up all of a sudden. And I feel like this whole TikTok scenario is a distraction. What do you think about all of this?
I don't think it's a distraction at all. Basically, the moment you download something on your phone, no matter what the end user agreement says it's going to do or not do, that program will have access to every aspect of your life. Now, I'm not saying that others have not taken advantage of having access to your data. Google has made billions off of people's data. As a matter of fact, they've created artificial intelligence capabilities, which I think go far beyond the public's knowledge. And I think that's something that needs to be looked at. With that said, the Chinese, the PRC, has been engaging in what I call fifth generation war. It's basically total war. Their goal is to defeat us without having to use military operations. And they're doing a pretty good job of it, I think, so far, using fentanyl, using technology, buying politicians. They're buying the best politicians money can buy across the board, and I do include the Bidens. And what's significant about TikTok is that where the data goes. There's clear indications that TikTok is essentially a tool of the PRC, of the CCP. And the moment you download that on your phone, it gives you access to everything and everyone you have. And it's if you're okay with the knowledge, and this was, I think, pretty much verified through the hearings the last few days regarding TikTok, if you're okay with the Chinese tracking and having everything, access to everything going on in your life, to include financial records, knock yourself out. I don't have TikTok, and I think others need to be thinking seriously about what they do put on their phone, what access they do give this sort of thing.
Let me broaden this out a little bit, because maybe I've read too many Tom Clancy type novels. But I'm skeptical of China and Russia. I'm on the more there are opponents side of things. And I do worry about cyber war in the sense of sabotaging the power grid and things like that. I assume this falls within the types of issues that you look at. Is that something that we should be deeply concerned about or just mildly concerned about?
So again, going back to anything that's automated, and I've testified this on this issue regarding voting. Voting is a big issue, obviously. I testified to a number of states regarding making sure that any tabulators are not connected to the internet for the very thing you're talking about. If you connect something to the internet, fundamentally, you've allowed access to your technology to a third party. That's just the way it works. You and I don't code. I don't think you code. I mean, maybe you do. I don't know. But I don't code, and I can't create programs. I can't go through and look at every line of every program that goes on my phone. So the moment that a third party has access to a piece of technology, it's compromised to that third party. And SCADA, supervisory control of data acquisition, is what you're talking about regarding these things, which control everything from power grids to traffic lights. And the question is not if they're compromised. They are compromised. It depends on who compromised it. Is the vendor actually protecting the data, protecting the system, protecting the access to the system so that only the vendor can get into it? Is there back doors? We've seen a number of hacks where a third party is allowed a third party, another third party, to get access to their program and thereby allowing it to be exploited by someone else, criminals or terrorists or nations. So, yeah, all those things are valid. All those things that regarding bulk data, bulk power, something we've looked at. We've run several conferences at the Army War College looking at this issue, and there's vulnerabilities that that exist, no doubt. The question becomes secondarily then, if this is the case, which I do believe it to be true, if that is that technology has allowed third parties to have access to critical infrastructure, who might do something bad and when? And those that's more of an intelligence analysis problem than it is one that that does not exist. I think those situations do exist. The question becomes, what do we do about it? Who are the likely players? What would they do, and when would they do it? Those are the interrogatories that we'd have to look at and should be looked at. And I do believe some folks are looking at it, but probably not to the degree to be effective in preventing something bad happening down the road.
Well, I hope that we have people in our military and in our high tech and DARPA and places. I hope we have people ready to, so to speak, turn the lights out in China and Russia. So I hope that we're prepared to play tit for tat in that kind of game.
So the answer is there's multiple classified programs which may or may not be engaged in what you're proposing. And as a planner on a lot of these things, yeah, I think we've looked at foreign infrastructure. We've examined how vulnerabilities exist. The best example of this I can point to that's unclassified is back in Gulf War One, JWAC, the Joint Warfare Analysis Center down in Dahlgren, Maryland, is it Virginia or Maryland? Virginia, was engaged in looking at what we call critical nodes, centers of gravity, critical nodes. These nodes were examined for reduction, which is a military term for destroying it. During the first Gulf War, we were able to turn out all sorts of lights all over Iraq rapidly by hitting certain nodes at certain times. So if you look at that as a point of yes, this is what we did, you can probably surmise that we're looking at other options in other countries to this day.
I want to just switch gears. We have a couple of minutes left. All of a sudden, we woke up and ChatGPT was all over the place. Who is behind this, and what's going on with this? What's the future with this? It's very scary.
So I actually listened to something on this last night. Google has been producing all sorts of AIs. I mean, there's something called Icarus, which is out there right now, I think. Let me check my notes on that. I don't want to deceive your audience, but there's been a number of programs which have been created by Google and other big tech companies, Twitter. I think Elon Musk could probably reveal some of the stuff that they've done if he so chose. But there's a number of very sophisticated programs which have been developed, which may even produce sentience. I mean, that is to say that you may have For those of you old enough to remember, I loved the movie Colossus, which actually became a sentient computer back in the 60s. And the truth is that that there are all sorts of programs that are being created now without any oversight. And ChatGPT is just one.
There's the music. We don't mean to cut you off, but we want to have you back. We have to continue all of this. And our ChatGPT, I'm fascinated. We got to hear your thoughts on that. So thank you. Is LondonCenter.org the best place for people to find you and learn more about you?
LondonCenter.org and ProjectSentinel.net is the two think tanks I run now. But yes, thanks for having me on today. Appreciate the conversation.
Thank you. And we'll have you back again. And Dan Mitchell, good to see you. Brian, good to see you. And thank you to all of our listeners. We want to tell everybody to stay tuned to TNT Radio. We've got the Steve Hook Show coming up. Final thoughts, anybody, before we sign off?
I'm with you. I'm Another ready for show. Steve Hook Show. Yeah, fun show today. Lots to go through.
Lots to go through, but we have to follow up also because we have a lot more to talk about.